Good evening. Welcome to the fourth installment of Let's Rock and Roll. I'm your host, DJ Treble, and I can't wait for my classic soul to share some classic rock knowledge with you all every Monday night on radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. Each week, I will be telling you all about a legendary band from the classic rock era. We're talking 60s and 70s here. They'll have the baby boomers feeling nostalgic and the newer generations ready to discover something old, yet something brand new. This week, we'll be jamming together to a band with one of the most complex histories and phases, Fleetwood Mac. When you think of Fleetwood Mac, it's almost guaranteed you immediately think of Stevie Nicks. You might even think of the romance of Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham, and trust me, we will dissect that topic later in the show. However, what I find the most unfortunate is that not enough fans of Fleetwood Mac give enough credit or acknowledgement to the beginnings of the band in the 60s, where their original sound was far bluesier and, dare I say it, rock and roll. Let's change that tonight on the show. Fleetwood Mac before you even realize this was Fleetwood Mac. Also known as Phase 1, featuring Peter Green. This phase is the birth, the first life of Fleetwood Mac, the period of growth and discovery and innocence of sorts, and just doing their own thing. This band was established in July 1967 as a byproduct of another English band, John Mayall and the Bluesbreakers. John Mayall was kind of like this demigod who created the supergroup, the Bluesbreakers, as a recruitment of other British musicians. For instance, Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce were part of this band and left to eventually form the legendary band Cream. Also, Mick Taylor was a part of this band originally before he was recruited for the Rolling Stones in the early 70s. However, his connection to Fleetwood Mac took place with Peter Green leaving the Bluesbreakers and, with the permission of Mayall, took drummer Mick Fleetwood and bassist John McVie to form Fleetwood Mac, along with guitarist Jeremy Spencer. At first, bassist Bob Brunning got the job in Fleetwood Mac because they weren't really sure if John McVie would actually commit himself to the band. However, Brunning was kicked out after the first choice John McVie agreed to permanently join the band. Fleetwood Mac released their self-titled first album in February 1968, finding success in the UK, peaking at number 4 on the charts. The band's first single, Black Magic Woman, was originally written by Peter Green, but its rendition in 1970 by Santana remains exponentially more popular than its original. For Fleetwood Mac, this song has its own popular following with its fans, a common staple in its live performances in the 70s. A band member will always remind the audience before the song began that this was an original Fleetwood Mac song before it became popular, otherwise known as Fleetwood Mac were being hipsters, saying, "This song was ours before it was cool." Such angry hipsters. Anyway, here's the first version of Black Magic Woman, which you'll find has the quintessential blues sound that defined the early Fleetwood Mac as the Dirty Mac. Here's Black Magic Woman on Penguin Radio. I got a black magic woman. I got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. But she's a black magic woman and she's trying to make the devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Yes, don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with your tricks. Don't turn your back on me, baby, 'cause you might just break up my magic spell. We'll be right back.
got your spell on me, baby. You got your spell on me, baby. Yes, you got your spell on me, baby. Turning my heart into stone. I need you so bad, magic woman, I can't leave you alone. I need you so bad. I need you, darling. I need you, darling. Yes, I want you to love me. I want you to love me. I want you to love me. Oh, yeah. Oh, oh, baby. Yes.
Welcome back. This is DJ Trouble, and you're listening to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. The band released their second album, Mr. Wonderful, in August of 1968. Their record was almost identical to the first album, except for a change in the way it was recorded. They used amplifiers and a PA system, rather than a recording board, to give the songs a more vintage sound. A friend of the band appeared on the album to play the keyboards, Christine Perfect, the pianist for the band Chicken Shack, and the future wife of John McVie. That same year, Peter Green decided he wanted another lead guitarist to even the load of guitar playing and further amplify his bluesy sound. He recruited 18-year-old Danny Kirwan from South London as a reaction to his frustration with Jeremy Spencer for his refusal to contribute to Green's songs. This is a motif of sorts in Fleetwood Mac throughout the years. A few members of the band, usually never Mick Fleetwood nor John McVie, would write their own songs and fit it in somehow with the band. It always seemed to me that Fleetwood Mac wasn't a band as much as they were individuals who wrote songs. And this would definitely become a lot more apparent when each member of the band had problems within each other throughout the years. But it was their musical talents that would bring them together, along with the great rhythm section of Mick Fleetwood and John McVie, who, if you flash forward to now, are the only current members to be alive around during the beginnings of this band. So they were, that steady rhythm section is kind of a reflection on the steadiness that they put forth to the band. But I digress. After Kirwan joins the band, Fleetwood Mac releases their next single, Albatross, their first number one single in Europe. The band then released two compilations, English Rose for American audiences, which include half of their second album and original songs from Kirwan, and The Pious Bird of Good Omen for their European audience, which comprised of singles and B-sides. In 1969, the band began their first expansion out of the blues scene. Because Kirwan's guitar playing was broader than blues and leaned towards more rock and roll, Fleetwood Mac had to change labels for a chance at expanding their audience. Originally, Peter Green wanted them just to be a strict blues band, but he saw the talent in Kirwan, despite the fact that he played more rock and roll rather than blues, so he had to accept that change as well. So they switched from the blues label Blue Horizon to Immediate Records, in which they released Man of the World, a hit in the UK. But their B-side, a Jeremy Spencer original entitled Someone's Gonna Get Their Head Kicked In Tonight, I think I get the message of that song, displayed the new rock and roll direction of the band. Sounds very punk rock to me, so maybe it's ahead of its time. I actually haven't listened to it, but I assume it's very ahead of its time, or at least good rock and roll. But they left Immediate Records after that due to the financial misfortunes of the label. They were a smaller label, kind of being eaten alive by the bigger labels. So they found themselves settling with Warner Brothers Records. Fun fact, George Harrison attempted to persuade Fleetwood Mac to join Apple Records because Harrison and Mick Fleetwood were brothers-in-law. George's wife, Patty Boyd, was sisters with Jenny Boyd, Fleetwood's wife. So, connections are pretty good, but they still have Warner Brothers, and they've been with Warner Brothers ever since. Fleetwood Mac released their third album, Then Play On, in September 1969, and it would become their most highly acclaimed album yet. The American version of the album features the song Oh Well, a mainstay in the majority of the band's live shows, excluding a period from 1997 to 2009, where they would play more popular Fleetwood Mac songs from the Buckingham and Nicks era. This was Fleetwood Mac's first rock album, featuring the usual contributions from Peter Green, as well as more songs from Danny Kirwan. He was kind of building his own in the band and really at this time becoming an established rock guitarist. Like, he was on his way to becoming one of the greatest rock guitarists of all time. Same with Peter Green. While Kirwan established his role in the band and gaining the respect of Green, who was notably hard to please, Jeremy Spencer was losing his role in the band. Spencer, he created his own solo album simultaneously, which was filled with 1950s style rock and roll, a style he preferred. He also loved playing old country, very much similar to Hank Williams, because that's just what he liked to play. He didn't really like playing blues nor traditional new rock and roll. He really liked sticking with what he grew up with. But after the release of this album, Fleetwood Mac became a sensation across Europe, but it had a cost for their frontman and creator Peter Green. And this actually breaks my heart a little bit, because when I see performances of him live, he definitely has a great, he's one of the greatest guitarists. Even B.B. King said it gave him chills to listen to Peter Green. And B.B. King was Peter Green's idol. That is an accolade to definitely be proud of. But his final single with the band was The Green Manalishi, released in February 1970. Around this time, he began taking LSD a lot more. His first dabble was 1969, but whose dabble wasn't the first time in 1969? I mean, it was the times. But he definitely began to take it a lot more in 1970 because it shifted his mindset away from blues to more psychedelic rock, and it, of course, expanded his mind, which is kind of why you take LSD in the first place. But during a party in Munich, Germany, while they were on tour in March 1970, Green took LSD and he goes full-blown catatonic. His band members cite this event as the ultimate deterioration of his health. His last appearance in Fleetwood Mac was on May 20th, 1970. He would eventually leave the band, develop schizophrenia, and live in psychiatric hospitals throughout the 1970s and 1980s. He made his reemergence once in a while in the 70s and 80s. He would contribute some guitar pieces to later Fleetwood Mac albums, but he would never really rejoin the band, nor kind of regain his respect in the music world for his guitar playing. It was kind of like he wasted his talent because of drugs, which is a real shame. But as of now, he's somewhat recovered. Like I said, he appears to play at blues festivals, but he really hasn't made an appearance since 2010. Nevertheless, we're going to pay one last tribute to Peter Green, because in his prime, he was a fantastic guitar player and Fleetwood Mac would not exist without him. So without further ado, here's a live version of Fleetwood Mac's Oh Well, a personal favorite of mine, on Let's Rock and Roll at radio.dominican.edu.
Shape I'm in. I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. It's down. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to. Understand, he said, stick by me and I'll be your guiding hand. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.
Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Trouble. After the departure of Peter Green, Fleetwood Mac enters Phase 2, which I like to lovingly call the puberty stage, also known as the awkward transition from its birth to what it's supposed to be. So this is kind of a roller coaster. Actually, researching this band, it's an equivalent to a soap opera, so hang tight. Danny Kerwin and Jeremy Spencer had to fill the void of Green, a tedious task in itself. The band released their fourth album, Kiln House, in September 1970. Returning for a few appearances on the album was John McVie's wife, Christine Perfect. She had called it quits on her music career in 1970 after the lack of success of her solo album. But her amazing vocals can't really go to waste, and trust me, she has amazing vocals. So she revived her music career that same year as she was asked to join the band, believing her as a vocalist and a keyboardist would benefit Fleetwood Mac's emerging rock sound. She made her first appearance as a member under her married name, Christine McVie, on August 6, 1970, and she would stick around for a long time in Fleetwood Mac. As one member joins, another one leaves, this time in a much stranger way. Jeremy Spencer left the band abruptly in February 1971 in the middle of touring to join the religious group Children of God, now known today as the Family International. Yeah. TFI is pretty much a religious cult where people are sent to live on communes, shut themselves out from civilization, and live as their own community. And the way they recruit people is they basically find people off the streets, they ask you about God, and if they've convinced you enough, they take you away and you live on these communes and you don't see the light of day ever again. They're well known for, just look it up. It's stuff I'm pretty sure I'm not allowed to talk about on college radio, or I just don't want to, but drugs and rock and roll, I think those are my limits. Anyway, Spencer is convinced to join this cult group and remains a member to this day. He would play concerts at the communes and now contributes to the TFI as an illustrator and story writer. Whatever floats his boat. The band finishes their tour, and in the summer of 1971, they hold auditions for a new guitarist. American guitar player Bob Welch, who was residing in Paris at the time, appears. He never auditioned for the position, but the band hired him anyway from a recommendation from a friend of the band, and the friend of the band actually went to high school with Bob Welch, and there were allegations that she and Bob Welch used to date, and so that's how the connection got started. Anyway, he gets the job, and they were desperate, so why not? Also, the hiring of an American rhythm guitarist in an all-British rock band might help Fleetwood Mac expand their audience into the United States. It's all creative marketing strategy here. Basically, the beginnings of these bands are all marketing strategies. That's what you get when you're a comm major, you learn about these things. The band releases their next album, Future Games, in September 1971. This album features a more melodic sound that had never been associated with Fleetwood Mac before, which bode well with American audiences. American audiences weren't super into blues, nor straight rock and roll. They were kind of more into mainstream sounding stuff and all that. But to each their own, they find success in America, and they lose their success in Europe with Bob Welch. But 6 months later, the band releases Bear Trees in 1972, and it becomes a critically acclaimed album for the band and the landmark of the Bob Welch era of the band. This is considered pretty much the best album from that era. Bear Trees features Welch's song, Sentimental Lady, which would be a bigger hit for him in his solo career. Everything in the studio seemed to go in their favor, but would end as they went on tour. The last guitarist of the early Fleetwood Mac, Danny Kerwin, became an alcoholic and would distance himself from the band. Kerwin would be fired in 1972 after smashing his guitar before a show and refusing to go on stage. He felt the pressure of the band get to him. He was the main songwriter for the past few albums and also became the lead guitarist after Peter Green left, so he was taking on quite a heavy load for the band. And they were changing musical style as well. Although he was more rock and roll, he also felt the addition of Bob Welch would stray away from that pure rock and roll more into a softer rock. Inevitably, that is what happens to Fleetwood Mac, but Danny Kerwin was just not having it. So he was just simply becoming frustrated with the band. A few years later in the late 1970s, Kerwin's mental health deteriorated, very similar to Peter Green, and hasn't appeared in the music industry since. However, he lived in mental hospitals throughout the 70s and 80s, and he was even homeless and destitute for a little bit of the time. And so he's kind of dropped off the face of the earth. After the departure of Kerwin, all hell breaks loose in the lineup. From 1972 to 1974, the band released 3 albums, changed their lineup 3 times, and even had a fake version of themselves perform. Yeah, I told you this was a soap opera. Danny Kerwin was replaced by guitarist Bob Weston, and vocalist Dave Walker joined the band, only to be fired a few months later. Okay, let's clarify this. Mick Fleetwood's still on drums, John McVie's still on bass, Christine McVie's still on vocals / keyboard. We got 2 guitarists, Bob Welch and Bob Weston, and then we had a vocalist, Dave Walker, but he wasn't really part of the vibe of the band, so he's gone. So we have a 5-member band, just if you're keeping track at home. But after the commercial flop of their 1973 album, Penguin, their 1974 album, Mystery to Me, would eventually become one of their most successful albums in the U.S., although it becomes a fan favorite, but I wouldn't say it was successful per se, but it was way better than Penguin. The album contains the song Hypnotize, which is one of the band's best songs and a personal favorite of mine. It's very kind of mellow, very trippy. This is like kind of Fleetwood Mac's closest hint at psychedelic experimental rock of sorts. Although everything was falling into place musically, the chemistry of the band was far from stable. The marriage between John and Christine McVie began to crumble due to the constant stress of working with each other, and John was involved with his own battle with alcohol abuse. Well, I couldn't work with my husband 24/7 either, so. Bob Weston would leave the band after his affair with Mick Fleetwood's wife, Jenny Boyd, during their Mystery to Me tour. Now that's just skeevy. That's just plain skeevy. The tour was canceled, and Fleetwood Mac was on the rocks. The fake Fleetwood Mac, put together by the real band's manager, by these just British musicians all around, who would eventually become backup players and part of touring bands for Robert Plant and I can't remember who else, but I know one of them joined Robert Plant's band after he left Led Zeppelin. But it was a cover-up to the cancellation of the real band's tour. They didn't want fans to believe that Fleetwood Mac were actually having problems, and they definitely didn't want to think their tour was canceled, so they just threw out people who definitely weren't Fleetwood Mac, but were under the name Fleetwood Mac. Now, you would be thinking, well, aren't they under contract? Don't they have their name patented? Nope, not at that time. The slight loophole in Fleetwood Mac's contract stated that the band members didn't hold the rights to the band name, so anyone could use it. It was Welch who decided the band should leave the Warner Brothers in England to join Warner Brothers in Los Angeles, California, and revise their contract, sign with them, and pretty much patent the name Fleetwood Mac to John McVie and Mick Fleetwood. So the rest of the band immediately agree, and after some legal battles for a year, the real Fleetwood Mac returned in September 1974 for the release of their album, Heroes Are Hard to Find, the first Fleetwood Mac album to feature only one guitarist. This would be Welch's final album with the band, and his departure from the band wasn't pretty, but no departure from this band is ever pretty or gracious. Welch had taken the main responsibility in the creative development of the band, along with Christine McVie. Welch decided to leave in late 1974 and had some falling out over some legal troubles with the rest of the band during his solo career. Mick Fleetwood was actually his manager at the time during his solo career, and John and Christine McVie would help him produce some songs as well. But this could explain why the Bob Welch era is known as the Forgotten Era of Fleetwood Mac. When the band was inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998, all the members, current and former, including Peter Green, Danny Kerwin, Jeremy Spencer, were inducted, except for Bob Welch. Now, Welch and John McVie had a really bad falling out over some lawsuits and such, and he said to himself that he felt distant from the McVies, but he always felt close to Mick Fleetwood. So, but even then, he couldn't patch much stuff up there. Welch actually commits suicide in 2012, and it came out of nowhere, and I think it was just a bunch of trouble. No one really knows what happened. But another piece of evidence that Bob Welch's Fleetwood Mac is nearly written out of history is that none of the albums to feature him are available digitally, such as iTunes or Spotify. And this is actually how I get the music to you on this radio show, is it's on my phone, I use Spotify, and for the Beatles show, I used iTunes because it wasn't available on Spotify. It actually frustrated me that I couldn't find any of Bob Welch's material on Spotify. So this disappoints me greatly because I would have loved to play you Hypnotized for this radio show. I think it's absolutely unfair that Welch's music is ostracized by the band and that the bad blood resulted in a reduction of music that helped keep Fleetwood Mac afloat. It's a shame. For now, we're just going to take a little break. This is Penguin Radio and you're listening to Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Trouble only on radio.dominican.edu.
This is your weekly Bosco break with your update of Dominican volleyball.
This is your weekly Bosco
break. Dominican women's volleyball team was swept.
The Dominican women's volleyball team was swept 3-0 at Point Loma on Thursday night to begin the Penguins' 3-day, 3-match road trip. The Penguins dug themselves in a hole early, hitting negative 53% in set one. They fared slightly better moving forward, but still hit .042 for the match. These Lady Penguins grabbed an early lead but were unable to hold on in a 3-1 loss at Azusa Pacific for their second match. The two teams battled and were nearly even across the stat sheet, but the Cougars were able to use their depth to edge the Penguins in the late sets. The Dominican University of California women's volleyball team dropped its final match on its 3-match road trip to Southern California in a tough 3-2 loss at Cal Baptist. The first place Lancers jumped out to a 9-3 advantage in set one and rode it to a 1-0 lead, but Dominican responded by taking the next two sets to go up 2-1. Trailing a point, 14-13 in set three, Dominican saw CBU score the next 5 points and Dominican would not recover. The Lancers scored the first 4 points in the deciding set and scored 5 of the match's 7 points. The Penguins, already thin on numbers due to mounting injuries, also caught a team-wide bug. Still, Dominican had 3 players in double-digit kills. Sophomore Amy Steinward led all players with 18, freshman Brittany Lateague added 13, and junior Madison Pallison had a dozen. Junior setter Hannah Smith dished out 40 assists. 4 Penguins recorded double-digit digs, led by junior libero Amanda Lee's 27. Steinward added 15, Pallison had 12, and Smith had 11. The Penguins' blocking also continued to be a strong suit, with 18 in the match. 7 of which came from freshman Kate Even and 6 from Steinward. Dominican returns home to the Conlin Center for the next 2 matches. The Penguins host the newest member of the Pac West, Concordia Irvine, on Thursday, October 22nd at 7 p.m. On Saturday, October 24th, Dominican hosts Dixie State in a 3 p.m. matinee. Live stats and video for both matches will be available at DominicanAthletics.com/live with live audio provided by radio.dominican.edu. That's the end of your Bosco break. Thanks for listening.
Pausing for station identification, this is Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. Currently, you are listening to Let's Rock and Roll, and I'm your host, DJ Trouble. I hope you're enjoying this hour all about Fleetwood Mac, because we're about to get to the good stuff. This is Phase 3 of Fleetwood Mac. We think we're maturing, but not really. Also known as the late teens, early 20s stage in life. You have a little existential crisis here and there, but you feel like you're going to get your life together. Entering 1975, Bob Welch was replaced by an American duo of guitarist Lindsey Buckingham and vocalist and then girlfriend Stevie Nicks. Like I promised earlier, let's talk about this relationship in the first place. Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks first began their professional and romantic relationship in 1971, and in 1973 would release an album entitled Buckingham Nicks. This is kind of a cult classic in the Fleetwood Mac fandom, but generally the population hasn't really heard this album because it's not available on CD nor digitally. But you probably have seen the album cover. It features the two of them posing naked on the album cover. Don't worry, you can only see the shoulder blades up, but it looks so awkward. But the album was obscure, although it impressed Mick Fleetwood enough for the two of them to secure positions as the new guitarist and vocalist in Fleetwood Mac. The following year, Buckingham and Nicks broke up, and thus began the illustrious theme of tension and anger that would produce some of Fleetwood Mac's greatest hits. This is the band you know by now. Now, update on the Stevie Nicks-Lindsey Buckingham relationship. They're friends, and there's not a romantic love there, but they still love each other, and they always love each other. But this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about hatred, tension, producing music because of their hatred and tension. This is what you tune into the show for, or is why you listen to the music. The band released their first album, an eponymous album, which became their first number one album in the U.S., Songs you'll find on this album are Christine McVie's Over My Head and Say You Love Me, as well as Stevie Nicks' most popular songs, Rhiannon and Landslide. However, this wouldn't be the Fleetwood Mac without the behind-the-scenes drama, right? John and Christine McVie officially got divorced, Lindsey and Stevie broke up, and Mick Fleetwood was in the middle of a divorce with his wife, Jenny Boyd. Add in some serious addictions to drugs and alcohol, and a heaping of general hatred and tension for each other, and you get the next album, Rumors. The follow-up album was released in the spring of 1977, and it became a massive success. Virtually a compilation of feelings felt by each of the band members, and every emotion expressed into each second, leads to the album becoming the second biggest selling album of all time, selling 19 million copies by the turn of the century, and it has sold 40 million copies worldwide. And this is behind Michael Jackson's Thriller. Nearly every song on the album was either a top 10 hit or played all the time on the radio. Buckingham's Go Your Own Way and Secondhand News, Nick's Dreams, a number one hit in the U.S. and the intro song that I played, and Gold Dust Woman, and Christine's Don't Stop and You Make Loving Fun. The Chain was also popular as well, as it's the only song written by all five members. Crack.com summarizes this album perfectly. That Rumors consistently winds up in the best album of all time top 10 list is made all the more impressive if you know that while performing, the songwriter, Stevie Nicks, was cheating on the guitarist, Lindsey Buckingham, with the drummer, Mick Fleetwood, and the lead singer, Christine McVie, was making sexy eyes at the spotlight while her husband, John McVie, was leading her in, with all of them on a strict diet of cocaine and vengeance. Perfect. One song that was left off the album is arguably and personally Fleetwood Mac's best song for the album, Silver Springs. The definitive ballad of the Buckingham Nicks love tragedy, this is Nicks at her lyrical strongest. I'll be playing that for you right now on Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble on radio.dominican.edu.
Silver spring, blue green colors flashing.
Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble. This hour, we've been listening and talking all about Fleetwood Mac, and it's been fun. Of course, it's kind of been a lot of talking for me so far, but the history is just so much. But don't worry, I got some great music coming up for you. An album as successful as Rumors is tough to follow up with, but Buckingham decided to be really bold and wanted to take a more experimental direction on the new album. He has always been the very creative type and kind of loves doing his own thing. So with permission from Fleetwood, Buckingham worked on the entire album at his home and returned the final product for the band to contribute their pieces with. Inspired by the newfound new wave music that was kind of hinting and would become more prevalent in the 80s, and he presented this to the band. The band really liked the direction Lindsey Buckingham was taking in kind of recreating their sound to an extent, and wanted to really make something totally separate from Rumors. They didn't want to be typecast. So the result was a 20-track double album called Tusk, released in 1979. Buckingham's new creative control somewhat paid off. Three hit singles came off of the album, McVie's Think About Me, Nick's Sarah, and Buckingham's Tusk. However, the problem was it was released right after Rumors, so everyone was thinking, oh my god, they're going to make Rumors 2.0, and that's not what happened, so Tusk kind of fell into the default of being a flop, even though it's absolutely not a flop. It's just a quirky little album. It's very different from Rumors, but I highly recommend listening to it because it is a good album. The title track features the USC Trojans marching band, and it sounds awesome. I'll be playing that for you now. Not the album version, though. But a trip into the future a little bit, the 1977 version from their live album, The Dance. I'll be talking and obsessing over that later. Listen for the tension in the beginning, the slow build-up with Christine's accordion, and the climax and excitement featuring the USC marching band. Enjoy! You're listening to Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble here on Penguin Radio.
On his throne.
Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Trouble. After an 18-month tour to promote Tusk, the band went back to the studio to create their next album, Mirage, released in 1982. I call this period of Fleetwood Mac Phase 4, the midlife crisis, or this absolutely sucks and I just want to do my own thing. The album went back to sounding more commercial as managers were hoping to regain the success that wasn't found on Tusk. Mirage is Fleetwood Mac's first soft rock album, featuring hits such as Buckingham's Oh Diane, Nick's Gypsy, and McVie's Hold Me. I'll be playing you the latter in a few moments, but first, a story about the music video accompanying this song. The music video was shot at the Mojave Desert and shot surrealist style, with many paintings, spacious desert, and broken mirrors throughout the video. Much like Fleetwood Mac in the 80s, this video just doesn't make sense. The strained relationships weren't helping either. Lindsay still wasn't completely over the breakup with Stevie, nor the affair she had 5 years earlier with Mick Fleetwood. Mick also has started an affair with Nick's best friend, pissing off Nick's. They just despised each other. Well, in that in mind, here's the song, here on Penguin Radio. Alright, welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Trouble. I'm running kind of short on time, so I just cut off that song, but don't worry about it. After the release of Mirage, Lindsay, Stevie, and Christine all released solo albums. Stevie was the most successful artist outside of Fleetwood Mac, with her first solo album, Belladonna, becoming a number one album and going platinum. Her next two solo albums were riding high in the success department. Meanwhile, Mick was dealing with bankruptcy issues, Nick's went into rehab for addiction problems, and John McVie had a seizure, a consequence of his excessive lifestyle of drugs and alcohol. Rumors circulated that the problems the band were having led to a breakup, but Lindsay, who wasn't pleased with Mirage at all, didn't want the album to be the end of the rumors lineup of Fleetwood Mac. As a result, the band released Tango in the Night in 1987, another album where Buckingham created nearly the whole album before the rest of the band got involved. Tango in the Night was a rumors-like success in the UK, hitting number one. The album features two wonderful Christine McVie compilations, Little Lies and Everywhere. It also features Lindsay Buckingham's Big Love, one of his best songs to date. Here's something I feel the need to address, because it does not get talked about enough. Lindsay Buckingham is the most underrated guitarist of all time. He deserves a lot more acclaim than he gets. For me, listening to him a majority of my life, I'm a fan of his. His unique style is intriguing, being one of the rare guitar players to be self-taught, not knowing how to read sheet music, and playing without a guitar pick. It's all fingers and fingernails. Here's a classic example of fingernails at their best with the 1997 live version of Big Love, only on Penguin Radio.
So still, oh, how build you kingdom in that house on the hill, looking out for love, big, big love. You said that you love me and that you always will. You made me to keep you in that house on the hill, looking out for love.
Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Treble. Now, I really wanted to just establish that part. This is really the only reason I did Fleetwood Mac this week, just to pretty much proclaim my love for Lindsey Buckingham. Watching that tape of that concert growing up, my parents actually called him a wine bag, and they would scream at him during this performance going, "Stop being such a wine bag!" But they really liked his musicality, so they were cool with it. I thought I was the only one who thought the whole performance was amazing, but Lindsey Buckingham, everyone. Now, we're wrapping things up on this fourth installment of the show tonight, paying an hour-long tribute to the legendary Fleetwood Mac. Of course, like I said, I'm kind of pushing time a little bit, but what can you do with a band as interesting of a history as this one? And such great music, too, all around. After the release of Tango in the Night, Buckingham and Nicks left the band, and in traditional Fleetwood Mac style, left with bad blood, drunkenness, and verbal altercations. Buckingham left in 1987 due to pretty much wanting to do his own thing and have his own creative control, and Fleetwood Mac continued to make music with guitarists Billy Burnett and Rick Vito filling the gap. Their album, Behind the Mask, was released in 1990 to mixed reviews. This is Phase 5, the years we'd really like to forget. Nicks and Rick Vito announced their departure from the band in 1991, and a four-disc compilation of Fleetwood Mac's greatest hits was released in 1992, the 25th anniversary of the band, and in 1993, the Rumors lineup of Fleetwood Mac performed together at President Bill Clinton's inaugural ball, aka the lineup we all really love and care about. Clinton's campaign song was Don't Stop, and the band was happy to perform it for him, but they didn't reunite permanently. It was just a one-time thing. In 1995, Fleetwood Mac released Time with the back to the Billy Burnett and another vocalist, guitarist, Becca, I don't even remember her name. I like to forget this era. But this is their worst album, and this is just something I like to completely ignore. That I just can't keep track of the lineup anymore. Just give me the Rumors lineup, to be honest. Subsequently, the band broke up for good that year. Until 1997. Also known as Phase 6, the final stage. We've matured, and now we're touring, and life seems to make sense again. I finally figured out my meaning in life. Fleetwood Mac reunited for a concert in Burbank, California in May 1997. This concert was taped as The Dance and was released as a live album and a concert film that year. And those were the two songs that I played that were live. It was from that concert. This brought Fleetwood Mac back to relevancy, creating a much-needed turning point. Those live songs I played earlier did have a purpose. For me, this was my introduction to Fleetwood Mac. I watched the VHS tape almost every Friday night with my mom and dad. We enjoyed everything about this concert. It's one of the best live performances I've ever seen recorded. Everyone brought their best performance that night. In 1998, the band was inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and almost right after that, Christine McVie announced her retirement from touring. However, she still contributed piano pieces to a few tracks on Fleetwood Mac's 2003 album, Say You Will. Fast forward to the past 5 years, Fleetwood Mac has been touring nonstop, with Christine McVie rejoining the band in 2014. The latest news to come out of the subject of Fleetwood Mac was this past January, where Lindsey Buckingham hinted at a final album and a final tour within the year to end Fleetwood Mac on a high note. Mick Fleetwood refuted, saying that the new album might take a few years, depending on whether Stevie Nicks will contribute to the album or not. We'll see how that goes. All I know is that Fleetwood Mac is still on tour, and I hope they don't stop for a little while. I still want to see them live. Well, that concludes tonight's show. Don't forget to check out all of our other DJs at radio.dominican.edu. For my shout-out tonight, it's nothing that fits with my show tonight. In fact, it's random. Check out of the Hat with DJ TBN every Thursday from 11 to noon, where there's a new topic every week. And the only way you'll know the topic is if you tune in to the one and only Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I hope you enjoy this hour about Fleetwood Mac tonight. This is DJ Treble, signing off with a classic off of Rumors, The Chain. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. the official radio station of Dominican University of California. Go Penguins!